right. Good afternoon, everyone who's listening here on RadioLore.com, this time for the weekly sports show here on the station. This is Golden Bold. My name's Ian Bailey, the sports manager here for Radio Laurier on a rather cool Friday afternoon here in the Waterloo region. We're on the Waterloo campus, so Wilfrid Laurier University here in the studio. It's always nice to be back, especially after such a long time. Of course, this is the term, premiere of Golden Bold. Just me here today. Typically, how this works, if you're new here, it'll be me and a couple other members of our sports team. We're in the studio. We have a lot of microphones here, and we'll be talking about sports, OUA sports. So that's Campus Sports, Ontario University Athletics. So we'll talk about Laurier's basketball, hockey, football, curling, softball, all the fun teams we have here for Laurier. And then we'll move on to professional sports. That's your NHL, MLB, NBA, NFL. Sometimes you talk about UFC. Sometimes we talk about Olympics, international competition. Speaking of international competition, I will cover the World Juniors. Don't you worry, but we'll get to it. We also cover sometimes more local sports, Kitchener Rangers, OHL, KW Titans, the basketball team here for the Tri-Cities. So it's always a fun time here. I'll be on air for about an hour. So if you're just listening to music and I popped on, hello. And maybe you're a loyal listener who comes on at 1 p.m. every Friday for that, for the two of you. I say, welcome back. All right, we will start with conversation, of course, about the OUA. Of course, back in action, of course, Laurier's two major teams of OUA competition, Laurier's hockey and basketball teams find themselves back in action this weekend. Of course, all the OUA sports were put on hold because as much as they're athletes, they're also students. And I don't know if you remember, but exams happened in December. I'm trying to forget. Nonetheless, men's, women's hockey, and men's, women's basketball are all back in action this weekend. Of course, men's hockey, the Wilfrid Laurier Golden Hawks men's hockey program, not doing well. I'm a Laurier student. I'm calling their game tonight at the rec complex. I follow this team for a while, and I don't like saying they're not doing good, but they're simply not doing good. They are not a strong team. They're a weak team right now. And last year, they were good. They were in the playoff picture last year. They got the wild card game victory to make it to the real playoffs last year and had a good showing, but ultimately falling in those playoffs. But this year, whatever happened over the summer was not good. They regressed somehow. And they had young players last year, and you expect them to take that next step up with that playoff experience they got last season. That simply is not the case. It's reverse. The team has simply regressed. They're 3-11-3 for 9 points on the season. That's second last in the entire OUA men's hockey league, and that's last in the West. And as the season goes on, January and February, and then after reading week, it's into playoffs. So their October, November, and December hockey was not good enough, and they find themselves last in the conference. And really no hope of playoffs. It would take a legitimate miracle on ice for the men's hockey team to make a playoff appearance this year. And one thing I noticed about them is that, you know, when I've watched them, they just haven't really been strong, but their special teams has actually been good, which is inconsistent with the rest of their play. Their special teams, of course, that's their penalty kill when they're down a man or two when taking a penalty, and then their power play when they're up a man or two when the other team takes a penalty. Those, like, they've been good on the penalty kill, and they've been good on the power play. So what's hurting them is completely their 5-on-5, their even strength play. They're simply getting outplayed. But when the other team has a player advantage, they seem to play better. It's a bit strange. Of course, the Golden Hawks, again, last in the West. But if you look at their power play percents, they're second in the West. They're 22.8%. They're 0.1% behind Lakehead for first when they're playing tonight. But, you know, they're nearly first in their conference on the power play. And they're first, just not even close to first. They're first in the conference for their penalty kill. So they're second in power play, first in penalty kill, and last in the conference. their 5-on-5 play simply getting outbattled and outplayed. And it's a bit too late to kind of turn things around, but it's also, you know, no time like the present to, you know, kind of obviously your structure, obviously your gameplay hasn't worked out as of yet this season. So there's no reason to really expect that to work out later on in the season. You know, if you're Laurier, if you're the Golden Hawks, the men's hockey team, I think you just break the status quo, break whatever you're playing with. Obviously, it's not working for whatever reason. It's just not working. It worked last year, not working this year. Starting January after the break, you're playing every game like it's your last game of the season. You're playing every game like it matters to see if you can climb away from the basement. You might not make playoffs, but at least you're not, you know, last in the conference, which no team wants to be. And it'll be interesting to see how they play tonight, because, of course, the Golden Hawks men's hockey team back in action tonight. They play tonight and tomorrow night, of course. Two home games in a row versus the visiting Lakehead Thunderwolves, of course, out of Thunder Bay. So they're making the long trek down here to start their season. Of course, they play again tonight at the Waterloo Memorial Recreational Complex at 7, and tomorrow night at the Waterloo Memorial Recreational Complex also at 7 p.m. Of course, they will have a tough battle in for them. Lakehead, of course, fifth in the West. They have 19 points in the West. Yeah, I say fifth in the West. That's out of 10 teams, so it seems like they're rather in the middle. But fifth in the West is only 2 points behind first in the West. Of course, Western, 21 points. Windsor, Toronto, second and third, 20 points. And then TMU and Lakehead, fourth and fifth, with 19 points. So they're a win away from being first in the West. So Lakehead has a strong team. That West, the top, really, going down to Brock, the top seven in the Western Conference for OUA men's hockey are all a win or two away from first. So that's a very, very tight Western Conference. So that's something to keep an eye out on and be interested to see how that plays in the next 10 or so games left of the season. Moving to the Eastern Conference of OUA men's hockey, Concordia and Queens have pretty well run away with it. Concordia, 34 points, 16-0-2. 16 wins in 18 games, and they've only lost in overtime. Only team without a regulation loss yet this season. Concordia is a favorite heading into the playoffs as we head into that portion of the season. They have 34 points. Queens behind them in the East at 30 points. Ontario Tech, third, 25 points. McGill and Ottawa round out the top five at 24 points apiece. And interesting, again, the West and East conferences in OUA men's hockey is a story of tale of two cities. Because the West, again, the first in the West, Western, 21 points. Windsor and Toronto fall at 20 points. Concordia, 34 points. Queens, 30 points. Ontario Tech, McGill, Ottawa, 25, 24, 24. Only when you get to sixth in the East, Carleton at 21 points, do you get to first in the West. Western also at 21 points. So the East Division, OUA men's hockey, is popping off, and the West is struggling, and no one is struggling more, of course, in the West than Laurier. Of course, the only person in the league who is behind Laurier's 9 points, of course, lies at the bottom of the East, RMC, with 4 points. Moving on to women's hockey, of course, the Lady Golden Hawks are doing much better for themselves. Of course, they're above the playoff line. They find themselves fourth in the OUA Women's Hockey Western Division. They're 8-5-1 for 23 points. So, of course, the men's team, 9 points. Women's team, 23 points. The men's got to step it up here as women's hockey, again, fourth in the West. That's bottom of the playoff line, but still above it. And, of course, on their tail to try to capture that fourth playoff spot in the West. York's at 17 points. Laurier's at 23. Laurier does have a game in hand. So you look, should the season play out as it is right now, just above the halfway point in the season, you expect the Golden Hawks to be in the playoff picture come postseason time. Of course, the women's hockey team, before their break, the exam break, they won 4-0, of course, in Woodstock. I got the honor of calling that game. That was a great charity game. It was part of the Woodstock Wildcats game. So it was a minor hockey tournament going on during that weekend in Woodstock, and the Golden Hawks went out there, played a game, and won 4-0. It was a great crowd, a bunch of minor hockey players, teams, and organizers all there. Great night in Woodstock, and they're looking to keep that momentum going coming out of the break back for the regular season. They play tonight in Ottawa, and then they play tomorrow in Carleton. So they're up for a doubleheader in the Ottawa Valley this weekend. Of course, Women's Hockey team also did play an exhibition game, not a regular season game, exhibition game. Does not count to the standings, and they lost that. So it's a good thing it was exhibition. That was in Fergus last week. That was January 4th there against Guelph Griffins. It was a charity game. Good night in Fergus. Of course, Fergus not too far away from Waterloo. Fergus, at home of Scott Woods and the Shoppers Drug Mart. And a Sportsplex. So there's that in Fergus. Men's basketball. Of course, in OUA, the Wolf of Laurier Golden Hawks men's basketball team, not doing so hot. The men's hockey and men's basketball are the weaker of the two teams in their respective sports. Of course, women's basketball not doing better than, well, they are doing better than men's, not by much, but they are doing better than the men's. Men's basketball at 3-8, women's basketball 4-7. So only one victory more than the men's, but women's basketball certainly a bit more promising too. If you watch the games led by Kate White, who is really come to her own this season as well as last season, and is sometimes just dragging this team into play. Hurdle, Cassie Hurdle is also a player on the women's basketball team. That's called play by play for them a couple times, and really impressed with Hurdle's play too. Kate White and Hurdle, some of the two stars on the women's basketball team, only able to get a record of 4-7. Into the Christmas break. Coming out of it, they play tomorrow at home versus the Windsor Lancers, which will be a tough contest. Of course, Windsor Lancers, women's basketball team, 8-3 near the top of the West. Of course, Laurier also in the Western Conference, 4-7, strong Western Conference. They're 5 out of 6 in the West. Of course, they won the most previous battle heading into the break at Lakehead, so that's in Thunder Bay. And one promising thing about the women's basketball team here is that they have more points for than points against. Typically, with a record of 4-7, you expect them to have a negative point differential. But they actually have a positive one by about 20 points or about 9-10 baskets. So women's basketball team, they're strong getting points on the board, but they're just not able to squeak away with the victory. So they're looking to change that storyline coming into January. Of course, next week the women's basketball team faces Algoma, including the 17th and 18th next week at home. And of course, January 18th, that's Shot for the Cure charity game. Of course, that's the visiting Algoma at the athletic complex, taking on the women's basketball team. Shoot for the Cure. Get your tickets there. Get your tickets quickly, because it'd be a great game, full of bunch of great game, but again, full of bunch of prizes and contests throughout the game for all the students, families, and kids who come out to support. And the men's basketball team also face Algoma that weekend. The good thing about men's and women's basketball is that they tend to travel together. They tend to have games the same night. Typically, women's basketball is a 6 p.m. game. The men's basketball is the 8 p.m. game. And typically, again, they travel and play at the same time. So it's always nice. You kind of get, you know, two games for one. When you go, the men's basketball team, again, they're also against Windsor tomorrow night at home. But the men's basketball team, again, 3-8. They have a 4-game losing streak. They're 4th out of 6 in the West at 3-8. But the West also isn't all that good. The Western Conference in OUA men's basketball is struggling, doesn't really know what they're doing. And essentially other teams, it's a farmland for other teams. They come, they farm, and they leave. Of course, first in the West, the three W's don't have a lot of W's. Waterloo, Windsor, Western, all tied for first in the West, but none of them above 500. None of them have more wins than losses. They're all 5-6. And most of them have negative point differentials. Look, Waterloo, 5-6. Top of the West, 681 points for, 818 points against. Quick math, that's like 137 point differential. And they're first in the West. West isn't that good. Laurier, 759 points for. They have roughly 80 more points for than Waterloo. And like 12 more points against. So they have better point differential. And they're 3-8. So, and they've also, again, lost four in a row. Their last win for the men's basketball team here on campus for the Golden Hawks was November 15th, 64-63 versus Ontario Tech. They won the first two games of the season, too, the men's basketball team. And then they have pretty well fallen off a cliff since then. So really, out of the four, you know, men's hockey, women's hockey, men's basketball, women's basketball, women's hockey is really the only one that's above 500 and are really looking in the playoff picture. So, again, support all the teams, but if you want to support a winning team more often than not on campus, it's looking like it's women's hockey. Elsewhere on campus, of course, the football season is over, of course. That was happened back in November before the break. The Golden Hawks winning the OUA championships, falling in the Nationals. But of course, Golden Hawks recently come out. I think it was yesterday the news came out, or today, right at 6 a.m. from Dan the Man, Dan Plistrick himself. The Golden Hawks extend football head coach Michael Faulds with five-year contract. Of course, Michael Faulds, head coach for the very successful, undefeated in Ontario men's football program. And Michael Faulds has signed a five-year contract that will see him remain in the role through the 2030 season. Of course, Kate McRae, director of athletics, saying, "We're excited to build on the foundation of long-term success that Coach Faulds has established. The growth of our football program can be credited to his ability to bring together a strong coaching staff dedicated to the personal development of our student athletes and on-field success. Coach Faulds' passion and dedication to the Golden Hawks is a big reason why Laurier continues to be a special place to play." Of course, the defending Yates Cup champions. And the Golden Hawks, great news for Michael Faulds. Great decision by the athletics department here. Occasionally make controversial ones, but this is one I think everyone can agree. Michael Faulds extended through the 2030 season. Elsewhere, Laurier Athletics, McMillan and Bailey named Laurier Athletics of the Week. Olivia McMillan, the women's hockey. And Sarah Bailey from women's curling. Not related, but I do like the Bailey representation. Of course, Olivia McMillan and Sarah Bailey are the Laurier Athletes of the Week. McMillan's fifth-year psych major. And, of course, recorded 2 points in that loss against the Guelph Griffins, the exhibition loss. And then Sarah Bailey, as completing her education post-grad, led the curling team to a 5-0 record at the McMaster Invitational just this past month. Of course, Laurier's women's curling team doing quite well, as I've mentioned, the 5-0 record and the tournament win at the McMaster Invitational. Of course, as I mentioned, it's just me in the studio today, so I've really nothing no one to bounce off. We had two callers into the show lined up for the latter half of the show. One fell through, so we have one. I will try to get that organized as I talk, of course, as we move away into professional sports. As I'm a big hockey guy, NHL is going on, MLB is in their offseason, but the Blue Jays making some moves. We'll talk about that later. NFL playoff picture is complete. The Bengals, 5-0 run, trying to make it in the playoffs. They didn't make it. That's who I was rooting for to make it. Bengals didn't make it. I'm upset. And, of course, the NBA season is also going underway. The Toronto Raptors, the only Canadian team, not doing so hot. No one expected them to do hot, but at least they were exciting to watch for a bit at the start of the season. Since around November, they have not really been exciting, and they haven't really put any wins together either. It was at the start of the season, the storyline around the Raptors, it was what people were calling an ethical tank. course, tank is when, you know, no professional organization will admit they tank, but tanking is when you field a pretty poor roster to get good draft picks, because people who end last in the standings get the better draft picks. So if you field a bad roster and, you know, kind of accept that you're not going to so hot, you're not making the playoffs this year. But it was ethical tank, so-called, for the Raptors being in the season, because they're, like, playing good games. They were still trying. They were still energetic, and they're getting some wins here and there, and they're putting the really good, the playoff teams, up to the test. And the Raptors were arguably one of the most, if not the most exciting team to watch. They have a lot of young players who are hungry, and it was great to watch throughout October and November. And whatever's happened, it's no longer turned from the fun Raptors ethical tank that, you know, encaptured viewership from around the NBA. They have since not fallen back to earth, but have come increasingly non-committed. The 82-game season, I guess, taking the toll, a bit lethargic, not exciting, and I've been pretty well trounced on. So the Raptors, not much to write home about there, but of course, in the hockey world, the World Juniors came and went rather quickly since the last show. Last show, of course, early December. World Juniors ran through the Christmas break after exams. And I don't know if you heard. I don't even pay attention to sports at all. Any sports broadcasting, sports commentary, sports analysis, sports journalism. I don't know if you heard, but Canada's World Juniors, not hot, quite cold, not good. I just realized I left the door open to the studio. We'll fix it after. No one's in. I'm all alone. Nonetheless, Canada's World Juniors. I just want to talk about that for a second. Then I'll take our only caller of the day. Canada's World Juniors. They lost in the quarterfinals. They got bounced by Czechia, second year in a row in the quarterfinals. And where do you go from here? It's clearly evident that Hockey Canada struggles to put together a cohesive team, struggles to put together the best team, struggles to field the best roster that it could. There's no way the roster they put together is the best available roster. Look at some of the snubs on Canada's World Junior Hockey team. Zane Parekh, Parekh's teammate Michael Misa, who was projected top 10 pick. Misa is probably the most outrageous snub. Andrew Crystal is snub. Yakimchuk, Kari Yakimchuk, wasn't on the team. Beckett Senecky, a leading scorer in his league, not picked. They decided to put together, you know, they wanted, they didn't put the best players on the team. They were cute with it. They were overthinking it. The Canadian Hockey Canada wanted to be, you know, 7,000 IQ hockey roster construction, and put all these specific players in their specific roles, and they try to set it up as if it, you know, a very conservative defensive team, but that's not who they like. It was strange, like they picked these really high scorers. They didn't pick all the high scorers that Canada had to offer, but they picked some, and then expected them to play 2-1 styles of hockey. Like, no, they're used to playing 6-0 games. They're just playing high octane, high offense games, and they're trying to play a very tight defensive, low scoring structure. So right there, it's inconsistent with the players they chose. But they try to force that structure on, and obviously, did not work. Of course, Dave Cameron, the coach, coming under a lot of fire, because as much as, you know, I can say that the players on the World Juniors didn't produce, which they didn't. They're also like 17 years old. You know, pressure gets to all of us, and it's a tough tournament, and the world's watching. And World Juniors in Canada World Juniors elsewhere does not get the attention that World Juniors in Canada does. Of course, if you go to someone like the States and you go, "Hey, watching the World Juniors?" They'll go, "What? What sport? World Junior? What are you talking about here?" Go up to someone in Canada and I say, "Hey, you're watching World Juniors?" They go, "Yep." Or, "My husband is." "Oh yeah, yeah, my brother is." "Oh yeah, 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 my cousin is." "Oh yeah, me and my neighbors were watching it last night in the back." It's like Canada's and World Juniors, of course, like that's where the World Juniors are. it's Canada. It's a Canadian sport, and all Canada watches the World Juniors. And perhaps that pressure got to some of the players, and they're young, and I don't want to rag on them too much. But they're also the ones playing the game. They didn't play that well. Nonetheless, the coach also has, I was not a fan of this coaching decision throughout the tournament when he was announced, and I feel morbidly vindicated that Canada did not do as well as they did. Dave Cameron, of course, was elected the coach of the, I'm about to call him the Golden Hawks, of the Canadian World Junior team. And it was simply, if you watch any of the games, I don't know if you did, I don't know if you didn't, poorly coached team. It was, he got out-coached. And it's a strange thing to say in hockey. You know, you see that word a lot, out-coached. And it's like, well, how do you get out-coached? Well, the structure they played was not consistent with the players they chose and was not executed well. And when the other team got a hold on their structure, got a hold on their plays, they did not change. They did not alter. They just kept playing the puck into the other team's sticks. So if when you know, you figure out a team typically in, within the first period, and then it's, you know, kind of a chess match between the other teams to, you know, pick apart their plays or change their plays, try to catch the other team, on a surprise. But Dave Cameron did not do that. He did not adjust. They were structured to play a very conservative style. They looked for balance and depth rather than offense in the best players available. They're satisfied with these long-range outside looks. And really, they only played the best hockey when their season was, when their tournament was on the line in that third period against Czechia. But prior to that, again, they got beat in by Latvia, too. And again, one of the things that, one of the criticisms that gets hounded on Dave Cameron, the coach, a lot, and Hockey Canada, too, management, you know how, like, you practice hockey? They didn't. You know, practicing, you know what you do to get better at a thing? Team Canada didn't practice. The States practiced. Good for them. The Czechs practiced. That's good. The Swedes and Finns, they practiced. Latvia, they practiced. Canadians did not practice. They chalked it up. Their excuse was, the players are exhausted. The games, you're playing in Ottawa. That's in Canada. You're playing the same amount of games as everyone else. You know what the Swedes and Finns and Czechs and Latvians had to do? They had to fly across an entire ocean and then play the same amount of games you did. You just had to hop on a bus for 4 hours up the highway, and you're the only team that's exhausted enough to not practice? What are you talking about here? That's rather soft by Hockey Canada. And again, Dave Cameron, I'm going to rag on him a bit much, but it's okay. They had little discipline. They took way too many penalties, way too many offensive zone penalties. You know, there are penalties that, you know, you expect, you don't want to take penalties as a hockey team, but you kind of expect them. They're part of the game, especially in the defensive zone. No one wants to take penalties, but there's some penalties you kind of have to take or understood to take, you know, to quell a scoring opportunity, stuff like that. So you don't want to take penalties, but penalties are expected. Offensive zone penalties, those are the penalties coaches hate, fans hate, spectators hate, players should hate. Evidently, the Canadian players didn't hate because they kept taking them. These are penalties, unnecessary penalties, 200 feet from your net. They're not stopping a scoring opportunity. You just happen to lose the puck, and then you're trying to get it back so you don't look that bad, and then you end up hooking or interfering with another player in the offensive zone, 200 feet away from your net. Unnecessary. But they chose those penalties and got put on the penalty kill a lot, and they got burns. This team, this Canadian World Juniors hockey team, no identity. They made a big deal of not picking one-dimensional players. They wanted to pick two-way players onto this team. So they snubbed more offensive players for more defensively-minded players. Well, they didn't want one-dimensional players, but that's what they got. They weren't overtly physical. They had a weak power play. They had hardly any offensive generation. They looked listless out there, almost purposeless. They didn't know what they're doing. They were confused because they're playing under a system that they had no experience playing under. Their leading goal scorer had 2 goals for a Canadian team, an international competition, 2 goals. They, you know, the Canadian team, they could have stacked their lines. You know, you think of, you know, just field, you know, field the 13 best forwards, field the 7 best defense, field the 3 best goalies. And you don't have a salary cap. You're not like in an actual professional sports league. So field the 13 best available forwards, field the 7 best available defenders, and field the 3 best available goalies. And Hockey Canada was cute. Hockey Canada overthought it, and it didn't work out. And they tried to make like a, you know, like other teams looked at our lineup and thought, oh, okay, we can do this. Typically, in Canadian hockey international competition, you know, other teams go, oh, no. Oh, have you seen their lineup? Seen who's on the fourth line? He'd be a first line on our team any day of the week. He's on the fourth line? Oh, this is over. But other teams looked at our lineup this year and said, oh, it's not that bad. We can do this. And they did it. Of course, again, Dave Cameron, the coach, a lot of blame on him. Of course, interesting to note before we take our first caller, because I'm going to rant about this. 20 years as a coach for Dave Cameron. Congratulations, Dave. Nothing. He's got nothing now. He won the World Juniors. I am saying he's bad, and then I'm going to bring this up. And you go, what are you talking about? He won the World Juniors in 2022 as coach for Canada. But I'd argue he was completely bailed out by Mason McTavish's hand-eye coordination and Kent Johnson's revenge tour. And again, they won that in overtime. 2023, last year, he wasn't brought back as coach, and Canada won again. Of course, that was Bedard getting like 25 points in 5 games. That was wild. So he won in 2022 off the backs of Mason McTavish and Kent Johnson, what I would argue. Doesn't come back for 2023. Comes back for 2024 and completely poops the bed. Of course, Dave Cameron, his coaching career. 2 years in the Central Ontario Hockey League. Nothing to show for. 14 years in the OHL. 0 titles. 3 in the AHL. He went to the playoffs once. And he's coach of the Ottawa 67s this year. And they're bad this year. They're bottom of the standings this year. All of that, basically to say the World Juniors hockey team was not set up to perform well, and they did not perform well. Nonetheless, we will have our first caller and only caller today. Another one fell through, so we'll get our caller on the line here as I look to set this up, and hopefully it works as we get him in on here. Give me uno momento. As I run into the mic, I'm sure that spiked it. And we're just waiting for it to connect. But nonetheless, yeah, well, Canadian World Juniors is just a travesty, a national travesty. Hockey Canada in general has not had a good couple years, both on ice and off ice, and they kind of deserve it, as we will have our guest come on in. We will see if he's here. Hello. Maybe, maybe not. Oh, wait.
Maybe.
Oh, there we go.
Oh, there we go.
Just to explain to our guests, this is Jackson Lee, of course. He's a runner of a sports show of another university campus station. He's up in Sudbury, CKLU 96.7. Swinging a drive home with Jackson Lee. We have Jackson Lee on the call. Jackson, how are you doing today?
Oh, I'm doing great. How are you, Ian?
Quite good. And, of course, we'll get right into it. Of course, I want you on the line to kind of analyze this move. Of course, we'll talk about other sports, too. But the Blue Jays, we're talking about MLB right now. The Blue Jays, of course, signing Vladimir Guerrero Jr., avoiding arbitration for the 2025 season. What are your thoughts?
Well, I got a lot of thoughts on this one. None of them are too good. I'll be entirely honest with you there. It's a good move on paper. You know, I mean, you want to lock the guy up for at least 1 year while you figure things out. But it's like, you know, you go to a party and you come home and you're feeling really sick, and then you throw up and you spray it with Febreze, and it doesn't really, like, it's not quite fixed, but like it's a momentary, you know, it's a momentary fix. And I think that's the kind of thing we're seeing with this sort of deal. Is Guerrero's been very, very vocal about what he wants. It's not not a test. It's not like some big mystery. Like, Guerrero wants to be paid what he thinks he deserves. And the Blue Jays front office has made it very clear that they do not want to do that, despite offering significantly more money to not just one free agent in Shohei Ohtani, but they did it again with Juan Soto this year. Two guys who have never played for Toronto. So the showing from the Blue Jays front office is really disappointing to me. And as much as these arbitration avoider deals are great, it's not looking good.
No, and how does that feel if you're Vladimir, you know, Guerrero, seeing the Jays and Rogers willing to shell out extraordinary amounts of money for the likes of Ohtani and Soto, and then when it's your turn, a player who's actually played for the franchise, who has helped the franchise, who is, you know, like top five in batting, I think OBS, or top six this previous season, has had great seasons with this team, and they're not willing to shell out for you?
Absolutely. Like, you gotta, like, I mean, again, I don't know what's going on in the guy's mind, but it can't be anything good. You said it yourself. Like, he is one of the premier superstars of the league. Like, if we look at the history of the Blue Jays, like, going back to Josh Donaldson or Bautista, like, until or since then, there has not been a guy like this. And sure, that was only a short while ago, but even if you look before that, you start talking about, like, the John Olerud out there and the Carlos Delgados. Like, Vladdy is that guy. He is that caliber of player for this franchise. And he said it himself. It's his house. And yeah, maybe they didn't win anything in his house in his tenure, but he's what, 24, 25 with a massive ceiling of potential. And they don't seem to want to do anything with it. And it's just baffling to me. I'm sure it's baffling to him.
Yeah, it's just indicative of the really, you know, Blue Jays kind of style over the past 5 years. They just kind of, you know, they sign him for 2025. He's still on the team. Like, after that, do you expect him to be on the team? And there's rumors of Bichette leaving too. What do you think the future holds for Guerrero in Toronto?
Well, it's very hard to say. I mean, Vladdy has made it clear that he wants to be there. And if he didn't, he probably wouldn't have said as much, but at least he would have made it quite clear, at least to me. But I think if Guerrero is not signed to an extension by the deadline he is set, and I want to say it's for when pitchers report to spring training, but don't quote me on that one. It is coming up fairly soon either way. But if Guerrero is not signed to a long-term extension by that time, I think this will be the last year that we see Guerrero in a Blue Jays uniform. And then by proxy, it'll be the last time we see Bichette, because I think they are on the cusp of a massive, like, entire roster blow-up.
I think you're right on the money there. I agree with you there. I think if Guerrero goes, Bichette goes, and those are your two young franchise players, they go, you're looking at a complete roster shakeup, which is what Atkins and Shapiro and Rogers, they don't want. They hedged all their bets on this roster, and on especially these two players. But they're not putting a winning roster around them. They're not shelling out as much money as perhaps they should. And if they don't start righting the ship, it could be another couple long years if you're a Blue Jays fan. Of course, that's MLB talk. Going over to the, I just finished like 10 minutes on the World Juniors.
I was going to say, I heard your Dave Cameron rant. I was kind of hoping I could add to it. But
anything you'd like to add there?
Yeah, get this guy out of hockey. I mean, it's bad. It's so bad. It's not good. It is not a good look for Canadian hockey. And I mean, I say this while also not knowing who a proper replacement would be, but I feel like the answer is just anybody. Like, again, you were talking about how he has won nothing but the World Juniors, and even then, that was completely on the back of Mason Tavish.
Yep.
And I completely agree. But it's like watching this World Juniors team play, and I like the game against the U.S. sticks out to a lot of people, sticks out to me, because I'm watching this game and they won't change anything. They ran the exact same playbook for 60 minutes and nothing worked. And I was watching, like, I watched all the games, and I'm watching that game against Latvia where it was, what, 52 shots and maybe, I think it was, what, two goals for Canada. And they took that and said, all right, well, I guess we just can't throw shots to the net now because all the teams are going to do that. It's like, no, the goalie's still on his head. Like, stuff happens, move on. And they just didn't have that same attack mentality against any of the other teams they played. It was completely conservative offense, And never mind the horrible discipline by these guys in the offensive zone. Oh, I'm heated. I don't know if you can tell, but it was a shame. It was a damn shame. And I don't know where they go from here.
That's the question for Hockey Canada. Of course, elsewhere in hockey, of course, the Eastern Conference of the NHL is heating up. I know we talked about it on your show a bit, but the Canadiens, the Montreal Canadiens, are back in the mix. The Ottawa Senators making their case. They're above 500. They have a winning record. They're looking to squeak into the playoffs, too, as the wildcard scene in the Eastern Conference of the NHL has opened up. Detroit Red Wings, the eyes are playing. The best thing to do in Detroit is to leave Detroit. And the New York Rangers also struggling, trading away their captain, signing Shesterkin to this massive money. Nothing's clicking. Zibanejad might as well be on a milk carton. So the wild card race in the East certainly opened up. The Penguins are in there, Sens, Canadians. The Blue Jackets are in a playoff spot, which surprised me. What teams in the mix there do you think have a good run at that wild card spot in the East?
You know, I know you're a big Leafs guy. I'm a big Leafs guy. But I got to say the Canadians. Right now, the way they are playing, they have had so many of these young pieces that have just been on the cusp. And they remind me a little bit of the 22-23 Vancouver Canucks, like right before Hughes and Pedersen and all of them and Besser broke out. We had, like, Cole Caulfield was the best 30-goal scorer to never score 30 goals. And now he's, second or third in the league? Right now he's sitting at 22 already. We're just over halfway through the season. Looking at Nick Suzuki having the best year of his career. He's playing phenomenal two-way hockey, and that's not to mention Lane Hudson, who is easily my Rookie of the Year candidate. Like, I'm sorry, there is no other option. Celebrini is great, Michkov is great, but this kid leads rookies in points as a defenseman, which is just absolutely insane to me. I think the Canadians have the fullest team, not to mention Sam Montembeau is a phenomenal goalie. They just have so many pieces. They have the depth they need. I don't think they're going to make a huge cup run, but I absolutely could see them winning a playoff series or two.
I think that's a great show. I agree. The Canadians, out of those teams, I think are ones that could solidify their wildcard spot. Of course, there's two, so there's room for Pittsburgh or someone getting there. Penguins, I'm not too sure about. They're old, but Crosby's, putting up insane numbers for his age, and you can't count out Crosby, Malkin, and Letang really ever. The Blue Jackets find themselves in a playoff spot, which is strange to me. Who let that happen? And I don't expect them to continue, but they've also been playing a solid hockey. Like, they're in a playoff spot for a reason, so it'd be interesting to see whether they can hold on to it. The Senators, of course, Ottawa Senators, another Canadian team, also in the mix. I've never been optimistic about the Senators. I like them. I want to like them more, but they just show that they can't sustain. They're not very consistent. So I don't see the Senators making a run in there. Of course, some people are really high on the Senators, I guess because they haven't been good for a while. But I think that's a bit unrealistic. Of course, their own general manager a couple years ago, Pierre Dorion, had this to say about the Senators.
Pierre, what's the number one thing you're optimistic about in terms of the Ottawa Senators?
We're a team.
That's what he said about that. Oh, no, you probably couldn't hear that because you're on the call. But elsewhere in Canada, Vancouver Canucks, Jackson, you're a Canucks fan. Pedersen, Miller, playoff spot. Quinn Hughes, Hronek. How are the Canucks doing?
Well, Ian, they're not doing good. They're not doing good at all. They look exactly like the New York Islanders from a couple of years ago. The overtime loss after overtime loss after overtime loss. They may make the playoffs, but they will have a negative record, and it's really hard to see after last year. I expected a bit of regression. Their shooting percentages were massive last year. Breakouts from half of their roster. I don't think anyone was expecting them to do quite what they did last year. But this kind of drop-off, especially from the players that have dropped off, like Pedersen, like Miller, they're still not playing bad hockey, but they're just not to the level where they're expected to be or where they need to be for this team to be successful. Quinn Hughes is taking this entire roster on his back and carrying them into a wild card spot right now. And as much as that's great, you can't rely on one guy, because Quinn Hughes has spent a fair bit of time on the injured or on the injured reserve, pardon me, this year. And some of the worst hockey I have ever seen came from that week or two, a couple of weeks ago, with Hughes on the IR. They were running Derek Forbert and Tyler Myers as their top two pairing. And if you're listening at home and asking who, that's a very valid question, because that's just not something that a team with playoff hopes could possibly survive running that sort of thing.
No, and yeah, you mentioned Quinn Hughes, like low-key, kind of a heart candidate for what he's been able to do for that franchise.
Absolutely. I mean, I would love to see it. I don't think he's a front runner by any means. I feel like he'll have to up the production just a little bit. He's sitting, I want to say, around point per game, which with good defense, with what he's been given too, is absolutely phenomenal. But for that conversation, you also have to talk about the McKinnons and the McDavids of the world. And I feel like Hughes isn't quite there yet. But again, still half or more of a season left. He absolutely could make his case for a Hart Trophy vote.
Of course, the Canucks sit at 46 points. They are in a wild card spot, but close on their tails for the last remaining wild card spot in the West. St. Louis Blues, 2 points behind. And my Calgary Flames, only 1 point behind, which the Flames are doing much better than anyone expected. Of course, even me, I expect them to be, you know, nowhere near the playoff line, bottom three of the division. But they're only 1 point behind the wild card spot, and they've been in and out of that second wild card spot in the West for the past month or so. So the Calgary Flames, close to wild card spot. Vancouver Canucks, close to a wild card spot. Other Canadian teams, of course, the Jets got off to that soaring start. Sorry. The Oilers, too, they find themselves second in the Pacific. The Jets, first in the Central with a Wild on their tail. And the Golden Knights, though, in the Pacific, they're 6 points ahead of the Oilers. The Golden Knights finally got their 10th loss just a couple nights ago after being below double digits loss in the loss column for a while. So firmly in the playoff picture for Canadian teams, Oilers, Jets, Leafs. Possible playoff appearances by Canucks, maybe Flames, maybe Canadians, but for sure, most likely, hedge your bets, safe bet, Jets, Oilers, Leafs. Out of those three teams, which Canadian team do you see having the most success come the postseason?
Well, it's hard to say because all of those teams are very, very good. They all have superstar talent. They all have depth, save for maybe the Oilers, but their superstar talent makes up for that. But with that, every single one of these teams has their own personal roadblocks that they need to get past. The Leafs and, you know, their first round, second round now woes is still a very big factor. And this team has not proven that they'll be able to get, you know, make a deep playoff run, especially when they're going to be running into massively strong teams like Florida, like Boston, maybe even Tampa, which, you know, on a complete aside, it's really, really scary that the worst playoff team in the East right now is the Tampa Bay Lightning. I believe record-wise, they would be the 8th seed today.
Which is wild.
But I digress. It is completely wild because they are, too, a very, very good team. So that's the Leafs. The Jets should be and probably are my answer for my faraway favorite, but Hellebuck and his playoff struggles are a very well-documented phenomenon. You know, so we're going to have to see, can they overcome that? Maybe, you know, it's entirely possible Hellebuck shows up to the playoff and completely plays out of his mind. And, you know, I wouldn't be very surprised at that either. But it's one of those things we'll have to see. The Oilers are a bit of a different case because, like the Leafs, they have a very, very strong road ahead of them. They're probably going to be playing the Kings again, and then they're going to be playing the Knights. So that alone is just an insane, you know, an insane gauntlet of teams they have to go through. And also, most of their, if not all of their offense, relies on two people on that team. Three, now that Zach Hyman is sort of coming back into his own. But if McDavid or Dreisaitl, or God forbid both, go out for any reason, this team is like a fish out of water. There is absolutely nothing that they can do without those players. And every time those players have gone out, they have shown to be a bad hockey team. So So I think the Oilers are definitely your odd ones out, and then it's between the Leafs and the Jets.
I think you hit it right on the head there. Again, Jets and Leafs have depth. They have consistency. We say, I think every year we've said the Oilers just don't have the depth. But last year proved that you might not need depth to make the Stanley Cup Finals. Of course, Oilers bowing out in 7 games, the last and deciding game of the Stanley Cup Finals, to the Florida Panthers. But as you mentioned, if McDavid, Draisaitl, now Hyman's heating up, if any one of those are out of the lineup for any reason, for any period of time, the season's probably over for the Oilers. Come playoffs. Speaking of professional sports, playoffs, NFL, baby, football. Ooh. Back in action. Of course, the bracket is set. Of course, the Chiefs getting the bye in the AFC, and the Lions receiving, of course, the Chiefs get a bye. God damn the Chiefs. But NFC, the Lions receive that bye. Much more happy about the Lions than the Chiefs. Have you seen Patrick Mahomes? Nonetheless, some interesting lineup, lineups here, of course, getting into the wild card match tomorrow. It's Chargers and Texans and Steelers and Ravens Saturday, January 11th, also known as tomorrow. Between the Chargers, Texans, Steelers, Ravens, who are your picks to come out of those? Again, Chargers at Texans, Steelers at Ravens.
Well, it's hard to say because on paper, I think, like, as far as Chargers and Texans go, the Chargers are far and away the better team. I mean, you look at them, they're the best defense in the entire league. And maybe some of the statistics over the last week don't really back that up. But going into, like, week 15, week 16, they were far and away the best defensive team as far as points allowed goes for the entire year. And they played some very, very strong offenses. We watched them completely shut down the Chiefs and barely squeak out a win against, or the Chiefs barely squeaking out a win against these Chargers earlier on in the year. I think the Texans are going to have to play out of their mind, but CJ Stroud at home can never, ever be counted out. So that'll definitely be a good one to watch. Same with over in the AFC, still in the AFC, but either way, Ravens and Steelers. That one to me is a little more of a toss up. I think on paper, again, the Ravens are a much better team, but a lot of their offense revolves around the run game, something that the Pittsburgh Steelers defense is phenomenal against. So it'll be a complete toss-up. My pick, though, has to go to the Ravens.
All right, going down to Broncos and Bills. Who do you got?
Oh, that's the Bills. It's a squash match.
Okay, good.
Love Bo Nix. We love the guy. But come on, that is Josh Allen's game to lose.
Yeah, Packers-Eagles.
Packers-Eagles again. It's got to be Eagles.
Yep.
As an NFC North guy, I want to say, you know what, like, I respect the hell out of what the Packers are doing. Jordan Love is a phenomenal quarterback, but it's got to be the Eagles.
Yeah, I'm a Packers fan. They're one of my top teams, but it's Eagles for sure. Also on Sunday, it's the Commanders and Bucks. Who do you think coming out of there? The Commanders, the sixth seed, again, versus the third seed, the Bucks. Buccaneers.
That's an interesting one, too. And that's what I love about this early playoff bracket is that there really aren't many, like, games that could not completely go either way. We talk about, like, the Bills game. We talk about the Eagles game. But to be fair, if the Broncos or the Packers win either of those games, like, that's not an entire surprise. And I think we see the same thing with this game. It is a complete toss-up matchup, and it will all depend, I think, on what version of Baker Mayfield we get out of the Buccaneers, because he has been he's quarterbacked this team, obviously, but he has truly been the heart and soul of this organization since Tom Brady left. And I think they ride or die with Baker Mayfield. He is the absolute skill to be one of the best quarterbacks in this league, in the playoffs. And he's also shown that sometimes when he's not on his game, this team looks completely lost. So we will have to see, but I would give it to the Buccaneers.
And the final matchup coming Monday Night Football, the fifth seed, the Minnesota Vikings versus the Rams. That's a close matchup, of course, 5v4. Vikings and Rams, that's the last matchup until all the matchups get decided. It's coming Monday. They got the night to themselves. Who you got, Vikings or Rams?
Well, this is going to be my hot take, because obviously you would think the 14-win Vikings would be the easy favorite over these Rams. I think they have, 10 wins, 11 wins? But after watching Sam Darnold play that must-win game against Detroit for the last week of the regular season and watching him completely flounder, I got to go Rams. I got to go Rams, and that's not just the Matthew Stafford-Detroit bias. I think they are the worst team on paper, but I feel like just playing at home, Matthew Stafford, Puka Nacua, you can never count him out. I think it's the Rams.
That's a bold pick again on paper. You mentioned Rams are the weaker team. Rams, you mentioned 10 wins versus Minnesota's 14. But I think if you're going to see any upset, I think the Rams, and Stafford might be the ones to do it. Of course, as we wind down on time here, just 2 or 3 minutes left in Golden Bold in the program. Of course, before I let you go, what's your Super Bowl pick?
It's got to be Lions, baby. It's got to be Lions. Gotta be. Dan Campbell is the best coach, not only in football, but in pro sports right now. Get him on Team Canada World Juniors 2025-6. I'm telling you now, it's Lions all the way. I don't care about the injuries. I don't care about what the people say. Lions, baby. Lions, Lions, Lions.
And with that, of course, thank you for coming on to the program. Of course, a bit last minute here. Of course, I had a couple other callers on the line, but none of them came through. So we hung around with Jackson for a bit. Of course, host of Swinging and Drive Home with Jackson Lee, CKLU 96.7. Always nice to have you on the program. Have a great rest of your day, Jackson.
Yeah, thank you, Ian, and enjoy your commentary burst tonight. I hear that's going to be a fun thing to listen to.
Yes, of course. Commentating tonight, of course, that men's hockey team matchup, as we say goodbye to Jackson, of course. And, of course, that's a reminder, of course, if you're looking for local campus sports to support the men's hockey team, looking to get 2025 started on the right foot as they're taking on the visiting Lakehead Thunderwolves. That action, 7 p.m., close by the campus in the heart of Uptown Waterloo, Waterloo Memorial Rec Complex. They play again tomorrow night against the same team, same time, 7 p.m., same location at the rec complex. But also tomorrow night is the men's and women's basketball teams. They're taking on the visiting Windsor Lancers tomorrow night, as both teams, again, look to get some wins under the belt, as men's hockey, men's basketball, and women's basketball all find themselves below 500 and out of the playoff line, looking for a playoff team to watch. They don't play home, but they're playing away, so you can catch that on OUA TV. Women's hockey play tonight in Ottawa and tomorrow in Carleton, up in the Ottawa region, doubleheader there. They're riding off a 4-0 win before going into the Christmas exam break. And they recently lost an exhibition game against Guelph in the shootout against Guelph Griffins in Fergus. But that exhibition doesn't count for the standings. They get back into regular season action tonight against the Ottawa GGs in Ottawa. So a bunch of campus sports to catch tonight. Both hockey teams in action tonight. And then both hockey teams and both basketball teams in action tomorrow night. So a bunch of Laurier sports to keep track on, as, of course, NFL playoffs also start this weekend. Hockey is NHL is going. It's going strong. Hockey night in Canada tomorrow, Saturday night. NBA is still going. Didn't talk much about them, so we'll talk about them more next week. And Vladimir Guerrero, big news out of the MLB and Toronto Blue Jays. Vladimir Guerrero signing extension through the 2025 season, but the Blue Jays are not out of the woods yet. This has been Golden Bold. I've been Ian Bailey, the sports manager here at Radio Laurier. Thanks for tuning in for this hour, and we'll set you back with some music to carry you on to the rest of the day. But back at 7 p.m., the station will host my voice again, along with Isaac Carmichael's, as we're on the call for men's hockey action tonight from the Rec Complex. Have a great Friday, and hopefully I'll see you later.